Is science in danger of creating a lost generation of talented early career researchers who are exiting the profession in search of more stability and better prospects? Psychiatrist Alec Widge certainly thinks so, based on interviews he's done with some of the affected scientists.
The career difficulties facing young scientists and young academic engineers are probably greater than they have been really in the history of the modern scientific enterprise, and that this is having some very negative but also very difficult to perceive effects on society and on society's technological progress.
Well, let's put some numbers on this then. In real terms, what's the scale of the issue?
To give you a perspective, and these are somewhat US-centric numbers, since the year 2000, there has been effectively a 50% decrease in the number of research grants awarded by our major funding agency, or the National Institutes of Health. And broadly, for my country, the problem is that we've got a graying of the workforce. In 1980, over 20% of scientists holding a major research grant were under age 36. Now, that number has dwindled to 1 to 2%. In right around the 1998 mark, the percentage of major research grant holders who were over age 66 actually crossed and now is approximately 5 to 10 times more than those who are young investigators. There is a whole generation of emerging scientists who are quitting the profession, who are unable to launch their labs, begin their careers, and we are losing everything that those people might have created.
Well, let's hear, because part of your work has been to speak to some of this lost generation. Let's hear, first of all, from someone who you dub Dr. B. This is spoken by an actor.
The year I finished my PhD, my advisor won a major national award based partly on my work. They called it genius and incredibly innovative. I finished my PhD, spent a few months in the lab to wrap up, and then took my first faculty job at a university across town, which was pretty normal for my field. They were excited to hire a female engineer. I felt proud of my work. But then, when I tried to take the next step, the funding dried up. The NIH said it was too preclinical, and the study section wasn't sure it would work. The US National Science Foundation said it was too clinically oriented. Career award reviewers at both agencies felt there wasn't enough evidence of university financial commitment, because technically I was in a soft money job. Nobody was willing to take a risk. We struggled by, and I kept applying. I eventually landed about $500,000 US dollars in grants over 6 years. But all that time, I hated the panic of wondering if I would lose my job the next year for lack of funding. I was on track as far as promotion and tenure were concerned. But even so, I resigned after those 6 years, using the excuse that my family and I had decided to move to another state. We never went. And now, I work full-time at a technology startup. I miss the prestige of having a faculty position, but I don't miss much else.
So, Alec, how do you react to that transcript?
What we have is these people who are in the positions where they're supposed to be transitioning to their own laboratory, to a faculty job, to doing their own research. So the senior stage graduate student, the postdoctoral scholar who's taken 1 to 2 years post-PhD to gain a new skill. What they're seeing over and over again is their mentors and their colleagues doing reasonable work, putting in the effort, writing a good proposal, really trying to sell, hey, this is my science, this is what it's going to do for the world, may I please have the resources to bring this idea forward, and being told no, and not being told no, again, not because they're doing bad work, but because there simply isn't enough to go around. And in this situation, one of the things we're observing is that there's been, as a result of there not being enough resources to go around, the committees that review these grants have become extremely risk-averse. They have really acquired a bias and a preference for funding persons who have previously been funded, who already have basically worked out most of a problem and are just continuing to polish the edges and making the solution shine a bit more. And don't get me wrong, that's very good work. It's just that there's a large body of research saying the greatest creativity in science, the big breakthrough ideas, those discoveries come from the youngest minds who still are questioning assumptions. And those are the people who are getting discouraged.
Why do you think, and what has emerged in the discussions you've had, as to why we're in this position? Because it's not unique to the US. I mean, I was in Australia recently. If you look at the success rates of grants in Australia, they're down in single figures. The UK has a similarly precipitous grant funding situation. Why are we in this position?
Fundamentally, governments are not making the investment in their future competitiveness. This is the other part that this comes down to.
But if they're not spending the money on science, what are they spending it on?
I would love to know that. In the United States, we have a problem of many hidden expenditures through the tax system. We essentially choose not to raise revenue from things we could, and that is an expenditure by refusing to collect money. It's almost as though if you give a customer a product for free. But I frame it fundamentally as also a question of what are we doing relative to what other nations are doing? And this is one thing that we see, is that while the relative share of research and development expenditures in the Western world and the English-speaking countries is going down, that of Asian nations is going up. And in a world where I see so many of the Western powers saying they're concerned about their geopolitical relevance, they're concerned about their economies, the fact is, if you want the engines of economic growth, it's these ideas, and someone has to pay for them. One of the other points we made is if you look at total industry spending on basic research and development, and you look at the size of what government does, and again, it's US-centric numbers, it's the difference between an Earth and a Saturn or a Jupiter. It's just fundamentally not even on the same scale.
Alec Widge, he's based at the Massachusetts General Hospital. You're listening to the eLife podcast with me, Chris Smith. Still to come, what genetics is revealing about people moving back into Africa and how your brain feels someone else's pain. But first,